the therapy that you need, baby, right here at home. Get lost in my body and pretend that nothing is wrong.
Quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. Broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territories, this is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's your next hour of commentary and music.
But we just need one night off to apply that good pressure.
I'm in my trash era. My name is Leslie. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I have an exciting show for you today. I chatted with Russell Cheung, who is the president of Chinatown Today. Now, he and I talked about this luxury condo development proposal called 105 Kiefer. You may have heard of it if you are locally located. And he told me all about why it would be ultimately really detrimental to the neighborhood and the community. We talked about having culturally appropriate services for the residents of Chinatown. We talked about the constant, ongoing threat and reality of gentrification in the area. We also chatted a bit about how a big project development like this, if it were to actually center the residents of Chinatown, what that would look like. And of course, ways for you, listener, to learn more and to show up for the residents of Chinatown whose lives are kind of threatened by this proposed development. So stick around for that. Before we get into it, though, here's some music by local talent Yusu, Futuro.
Thank you. Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. I'm here today with Russell Chung, who is the president of Chinatown Today. We're going to be discussing some, like a recent big issue that has come up in the neighborhood, and also many Vancouverites might want to know more about it. So thank you for joining me, Russell.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the meat of the conversation, who are you? Introduce yourself to the listener. What do you do, and what is Chinatown Today?
Yeah, so as you just heard, my name's Russell Chiang. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the president of Chinatown Today. And so we're a nonprofit with the mission of helping share Chinatown's stories. And those are stories past, present, and future. We're generally focused on Vancouver's Chinatown, where we're based, which is on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Thank you for that. So one of the big things, obviously, that's been happening around Chinatown right now is this discussion about 105 Kiefer, and your organization has done a lot to raise awareness about it, and to sort of rally folks behind, reasons as to why perhaps the development is not a great, does not belong in Chinatown. So maybe before we get into that, what is 105 Kiefer?
Yeah, so 105 Kiefer, it's the address at the corner of Kiefer and Columbia Streets, right in front of the Chinatown Memorial Square. Some people also know that as the Kiefer Triangle. And the Chinatown Memorial Monument, which is at the center of the square, and it honors Chinese Canadian laborers and veterans. It's also right across the street from the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park, which is the public park adjoining to the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden. And it's also inspired by traditional Chinese gardens and the Chinese Canadian Military Museum as well. And now, so it's owned right now by Beatty, which is a big property developer that, and I believe they own properties all across Canada. They had originally bought 105 Kiefer in 2013 and had put several proposals forward on the site, all of which have been rejected by the community and by the city. And the last round was in 2017. And now the proposal this time around is the same one as in 2017, which is 111 luxury condos towering over the Chinatown Memorial Square and Memorial Monument. This building has no affordable or seniors housing and no safeguards against gentrification. And so the reason why Chinatown Today is getting involved in this and has been involved in this, we were actually involved the fight against 105 Kiefer the first time around, is because the importance of the site, not only in telling the stories of these Chinese Canadian laborers and veterans who fought for our right to vote and built the country and society in which we live, but also because it's a site of making new stories and telling new stories, whether it's mahjong events that were being held in the summer in the square by being held by the Youth Collaborative for Chinatown, other community events as well, and ceremonies, festivals. And so that's it's a site of huge importance for the community, and in order to help safeguard the ability for it to be a site for further storytelling and story making in the future. That's sort of how we've come to get involved with in this fight.
You mentioned earlier that 105 Kiefer, this development has been proposed and shut down over and over again. So mm-hmm. Why is that? So as I understand it, 2017 was the last time that it kind of got overturned. But why are they back?
Yeah, so they're back because actually after 2017, the city had rejected the proposal. Jerry Dubrovolny, who was the city's chief engineer at the time and the one who delivered most of the reasons at the development permit board hearing back in 2017, had mentioned a few different factors that made the proposed development inconsistent with the applicable bylaws and design guidelines. But And he had mentioned that these flaws in the design would actually be so drastic and require such drastic changes to the design that it would essentially be a total redesign as opposed to something that's just an accepting of the proposal or application with changes. And so afterwards, after the city had rejected the application, they had offered BD a few different options, including a land swap and a land purchase. BD rejected those and instead went to court to get the decision overturned. They sought judicial review of the development permit board's decision. They're actually unsuccessful, so they failed on all but one of their arguments at court. And the one argument was that the reasons for the decision were not sufficient. And so there's a case in 2019 that sort of outlined the requirements for administrative decision makers, so basically non-elected decision makers in government. And part of that was that that decision was that if a decision maker makes a decision that's quite different from the previous I guess the previous record of decisions, then they should provide reasons. And if they don't provide reasons, then the decision can be handed back down, and so or handed back to the decision maker, because without sufficient reasons, then it's considered unreasonable. And so that's what happened here. So that was the only point on which BD was successful. And so now they're back. They've chosen not to amend their application or withdraw it. And so they're bringing back a 2017 application. It will be decided under the 2017 bylaws and 2017 guidelines, which are a little bit different from what we have now. There's been quite a bit of progress in the city in the intervening years in terms of attitudes towards Chinatown and measures to help protect this valuable neighborhood for the city. But yeah, so that's why it's back.
With regards to that, since the proposal was made in 2017 and they're going to be reviewing it again under those 2017 bylaws, what is the reason why they're not reviewing it under the 2023 ones or the more current bylaws?
Yeah, so that's the result of another legal case. So there was basically the current state of law in BC is looks like for these kinds of decision makers, if there's an error, if they're found to have an unreasonable decision, then it goes back to the same as if they were making this decision in 2017 or back at the beginning, but if the error, or whatever unreasonableness, didn't actually happen. And so in this case, it's considered fair for them for the city to make the decision under the 2017 rules. And in 2017 they did actually reject it based on the bylaws and policies and guidelines that were in place, but the reasoning in the written decision was actually I think the written decision didn't quite have much in the way of reasoning. It just mentioned that it was non-compliant with certain bylaws and policies without going into the same level of detail that Mr. Jerry Dubrovolny had gone into in the hearing itself, and that had been voiced by quite a few community members, academics, and other experts in their submissions at that time.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. Wow. Municipal bylaws are kind of weird. I want to move on a little bit to the kind of like the building itself. You mentioned before that if it were to be developed, it could have a pretty detrimental effect on Chinatown economically. Also, speaking in terms of like culturally as well, Could you talk a little bit more about that? So how will that development affect Chinatown in those levels?
Yeah, so there's a few ways that this proposal, if, you know, if it were to be developed, would negatively affect Chinatown. And one part is just the fact that it's not an accessible space. So, being 111 luxury condos, you know, with no affordable seniors housing or culturally sensitive or appropriate housing, then that means that this is a building that will not be able to serve as housing for the majority of the community, or not just the majority, but like say 99.9% of Chinatown. And so that's one way that the direct building itself would be a detrimental impact, especially because there is such a need for seniors housing and for culturally appropriate housing in Chinatown. Now there's also impacts beyond the four lines of the lot boundary, and that's really that a building like this would of course tower over the Chinatown Memorial Square and Chinatown Memorial Monument, as well as the Sun Yat-sen Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park and the Chinese Canadian Military Museum. And so, especially with the design choices that that BD has put forward, this would just do irreversible damage to the sense of place and community vibrancy in Chinatown, with you know, having a chilling effect on the streetscape, as we've seen with other luxury condo developments in Chinatown, and of course just towering over and really dwarfing the memorial monument, instead of sort of highlighting it as you know, as a site for honoring the ancestors and our forebears as a community, which is how the monument has really been intended for. In addition to that, a building like this is will worsen will intensify gentrification pressures, and will intensify development pressures on adjacent buildings, whether they're heritage or house legacy businesses, or serve as housing for seniors, low-income folks, or others who are important members of our community. Yeah, so a building like this would it would because it intensifies gentrification and development pressures on other buildings, and because the units in this building would fetch such high prices, of course that drives up rents on neighboring buildings, and can cause people to be evicted or just to leave when these rent increases get too high to bear. And so what that has the effect of doing is basically sucking the life out of our streetscape and out of our community. We've already learned the hard way from developments like 188 Kiefer, 189 Kiefer, Blue Sky, which is next door on Main, as well as there's a building on the 700 block of Main Street, and a few other large luxury condos in Chinatown, that these large-scale developments, far from bringing body heat that can help revitalize the community, sort of have a chilling effect on the streetscape and worsen gentrification pressures on the community, which they promised to help. We've already seen this play out here in Vancouver, but this is the same thing that's happened in Seattle, Portland, Montreal, Los Angeles, and elsewhere. We've seen that the residents of these new buildings don't are often not the ones that are not people that will be going to frequent or support legacy businesses, or helping support the services that many existing community members, elders, and seniors desperately need. And so that's despite the fact that you might see an increase in density or an increase in population, the fact is that this kind of development doesn't actually serve the needs of the community, and often worsens the pressures and crises that we're already facing.
That is definitely a fair concern. Thank you for that. The one thing that comes to mind to me is that I think quite recently there were seven organizations, local organizations in Chinatown that signed an open letter to voice their support for 105 Kiefer. One of those people being, I believe, Jordan Ng, who is the president of Chinatown Business Innovation Association. And one thing that they claim is that no displacement is going to happen, partly because in their view nobody has lived in that lot. So, but as you have pointed out, the threat of gentrification is very real, as we've seen in many other Chinatowns across what we call North America. So what is kind of like the logic behind their argument that nobody could be nobody is under the threat of displacement, as we know what gentrification looks like in many other Chinatowns and is an active threat in our Vancouver Chinatown as well.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a difference between displacement and gentrification. And so displacement is often happens when you don't have when say someone buys an existing building that already serves as housing and starts to jack up the rents or starts evicting people. And so those residents are displaced, or I guess actively displaced. You also have gentrification, which is the which is similarly are similar and related, but can occur even when no active displacement is happening. For example, here where the 105 Kiefer, I believe it was a gas station for a number of years, owned by the Lee brothers, who I believe one of whom was a veteran as well. But he, so this lot, of course, right now is not being used for housing, but even so, the fact that this development is going up worsens pressures, whether it's development pressures, rental pressures on neighboring buildings, even buildings that aren't right next to it, but elsewhere within the HA1A zone, as well as within Chinatown and neighboring communities like Strathcona as well. And so, so even where no existing housing is being displaced or existing residents are being actively displaced, there still can be ways that people are driven out, whether it's through rental increases or especially in the case of these new developments, is that they end up often because of the exorbitant rents in on the ground floor in retail spaces. It cannot serve as home for legacy businesses or businesses that are accessible to low-income seniors and other res long-time residents of Chinatown. And so when these kinds of buildings come in and create those changes in the streetscape, make them far less inviting or to long-time residents who then have to go further and further afield, then they may feel that they're being pushed out of the community anyways, even if there isn't an effect on their specific housing units. And the other thing that we often forget when developers try to impose these kinds of projects on our communities is that it isn't just the fact that this condo development doesn't serve any of our needs. It's also the fact that a building like this going up forecloses the possibility of having anything better on the site for the foreseeable future, or at least for the lifetime of a building. Right, we've seen that our neighbors in Hogan's Alley have been re-emerging and resurging after over 50 years, but who knows how long it would take if we let Chinatown go today.
Definitely, I definitely see where you're coming from with that. And thank you for the clarification between the difference between displacement and gentrification. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. I'm talking with Russell Chung, who is the president of Chinatown Today, an organization that aims to tell the stories of Chinatown. They're doing a lot of campaigning and work around bringing awareness to a development. made by BD Living, and it's colloquially known as 105 Kiefer. We're talking about that right now. Russell, one of the things that you kind of mentioned was this idea of, actually, before I go into that, I do have to say, regarding the aesthetics of the building, because you mentioned that as well. I did see the kind of like the model, the render that Chinatown Today put up on your website, and I have to agree, it looks bad. It looks horrifying. It doesn't look very welcoming. And at the same time, it kind of, you know, it really stands out in like a not a very good way with the rest of the surroundings of Chinatown. I have to kind of commend you guys for putting that together. I love a miniature, but that was kind of horrifying to look at. So yeah, it was an experience. But before, earlier you were mentioning this idea of like foot traffic coming into Chinatown if the development does go through. And certainly on the other side, there's a big point of discussion from the other side that proponents of the project rally behind, which is this idea that 105 Kiefer could refresh Chinatown. And one of the terms that they tend to use is to revitalize. I've certainly heard that from, you know, not just like the organizations and businesses, but I've also heard like your everyday Chinese Canadians in Vancouver say that these developments could revitalize Chinatown. But what do they mean by this? And what does that actually look like?
Yeah, so I think that term revitalize, you know, it sort of gives this idea of, you know, bringing back life to the community. Of course, sort of ignoring the fact that there are people who have still, you know, have continued to live and continued to hold space and make space in Chinatown for cultural expression, for celebration, and to live other aspects of their lives. And so, this idea of revitalization really has to do with, you know, bringing more people in to help, you know, increase foot traffic, help businesses that are struggling. Of course, we've seen and we've learned the hard way that these kinds of buildings don't necessarily do that. So, for example, as I mentioned, this 188 Kiefer, this Blue Sky next door on Main 189 Kiefer across the street as well, 700 block on Main Street. There's a few of these that, of course, you know, they are quite tall. They do, there are a lot of people living in them, but unfortunately, you know, a lot of these new residents don't support local Chinatown businesses, instead preferring to shop elsewhere, whether it's further downtown or at, you know, new gentrifying businesses that don't necessarily fall within an accessible price range for existing residents or the existing community, or are also language inaccessible as well, which many of them are. And so despite the fact that these you know, these buildings have people coming in, they don't actually bring body heat to the sidewalk or to the streets. Of course, I think we all look back and see, or look at, for those of us who, like myself, who weren't alive at the time, we look at photos from, and maybe in the archives or family photos from the 1970s that just show just how bustling the street was in Chinatown around that time. But and of course wish that Chinatown could be something like that today. But how we achieve that, and how that is and where we are when we do achieve that, are things that definitely are worth considering. In addition to the issues with I guess you could say the new residents in these kinds of luxury condo buildings, you can also think about the businesses that they house on the ground floor. We can see that in the 189 Kiefer, so the Kiefer Block buildings. And so those are on the northwest corner of Kiefer and Main. You can see that the corner unit is empty. We've got a high-end bar down Kiefer, as well as vegan pizza, I believe, right on Main Street. And then and in a few other of these other buildings, we have we can see that that the retail units are either just empty, or they're in the process of being emptied, whether it's businesses that are saying that they're trying to pass on their lease, or that they're selling. And that's the case as well for Brixton Flats, which is the development at Pender and Gore, which you might remember from their construction when they when a piece of material fell through the roof of the Lees Society. And you might also remember that that's where the it's the building that covered up the Lao Tzu mural. And so you can see that with these empty units, rather than being a draw to the community, rather than bringing more people, more foot traffic down into Chinatown by being an attraction, these empty storefronts more end up having a chilling effect as well, where you know, it's quite inaccessible, and it looks and the streetscape looks quite cold, where you have so many empty units, especially when these are large glass facades as opposed to designs that are I guess more in line with the historic and current context of Chinatown.
That's very interesting. And I guess that's, I thank you for sharing your knowledge with me here. That raises some red flags, I suppose, knowing that there are so many empty lots in Chinatown that are owned by these large corporations, these large properties, but then also knowing that a lot of community members have been struggling to find places where they can organize and do activities. I think I heard recently that, actually, I think it was from the May 29th public hearing where there was a Chinese elder who mentioned that her exercise group needed a place to go, and they were at an empty lot practicing their exercises, and the property managers called the cops on them. And that is a big concern.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a concern with ensuring that we do have space that's accessible. For example, the actually the city policies and guidelines actually mentioned that Chinatown Memorial Square, which is the square right in front of 105 Kiefer, it serves as the main public space, public open space in Chinatown. So the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park, it's is free to enter, unlike the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden, which is paid admission. But that the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park does close at certain hours, and is actually often gated up. But the Memorial Square is open for use all around the clock, essentially. And so it's important that we preserve and maintain these kinds of publicly accessible, truly publicly accessible spaces in a neighborhood that's that needs them so urgently.
Definitely, I definitely agree with you on that. So we've discussed, the ways that this development could affect kind of like the economy and cultural aspects of Chinatown at length. And it doesn't really seem like it's really serving the people of Chinatown. So can 105 Kiefer be done right for the residents?
Yeah, I think not in its current iteration. So I don't think that what BD is putting forward or has any previous iteration that they've put forward in the past has really served the needs of the community. I think there's a whole, I can envision a whole host of ways in which 105 Kiefer could be developed that could actually serve, do right by Chinatown and do right by community members, residents, as well as even people who have more tenuous connections to the neighborhood. But I think that right now, as it stands, BD's proposal does none of that, and so that's quite unfortunate. And so the hearing that's was actually started on May 29th, but they have postponed their decision. I believe that there were so many speakers on the 29th that they had to that's the reason why they're shifting the next leg of the hearing to be on June 12th. And so what the development permit board will be deciding on June 12th isn't if there's if this current proposal could be modified to serve the needs of Chinatown better, because they can really only look at design aspects as well as submissions from the community. And so what they're looking at is whether this proposal is right for Chinatown or if it's not. And in our view, it's it is not. And the I guess the shaping of what it could look like and what how 105 Kiefer could be developed in a way that does serve the needs of the community, that's something that would definitely need you know, meaningful engagement with Chinatown residents, with seniors, with organizations in the neighborhood. But that's something that would only be able to be considered if the development permit board does reject the application.
Let's say that BD did not own this property, and rather, it was the residents of Chinatown who got a tad more say about this. What do you think is needed for Chinatown right now if this lot were to be offered to the residents to develop on their own?
Well, I think we need truly affordable, truly accessible housing, whether it's for seniors, for new immigrants, for new families, for the people that will make that can actually help revitalize Chinatown, the people that will help support our legacy businesses and help maintain the sense of community that has been so strong over the last 150 years in Chinatown. But I think the other thing that is definitely necessary is again, public space, publicly accessible space that can be used by anyone, that there are no restrictions, that folks can express their culture, can tell stories, share stories, and just share space with each other. I think that's something that's definitely necessary. And of course, in an ideal world, an ideal 105 Kiefer development would be sensitive to its surrounding context, whether it's the Chinatown Memorial Monument and the Chinatown Memorial Square, or the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park, or the Chinese Canadian Military Museum, or in terms of the size and massing of it, which of course the current proposal has some issues, as well as thinking about design aspects that can properly pay homage to the vernacular architecture of Chinatown without tokenizing or without creating a caricature like, again, the current proposal does. But ultimately, that's something that we can't really consider right now, because the only question that we're really being faced with is 105 Kiefer, is BD's 105 Kiefer right for Chinatown? And of course, the answer is no.
So for people who want to learn more about your work, whether is regards directly to Chinatown today's work around opposing and bringing attention to this development, or if it's just the movement in general to oppose 105 Kiefer, where can they learn more?
Yeah, so you can learn more at our website, which is Chinatown.today. So that's Chinatown dot Today, as well as our Instagram, which is at Chinatown.today, where we post announcements, articles, stories, and help boost others' stories in our community. In addition, with regards to 105 Kiefer, you can also check out SaveChinatownYVR.org, as well as again our website. We do and Instagram. We do post some stories and have some literature on there as well, with where you can learn a little bit more about the current fight as well as the 2017 and earlier fights for 105 Kiefer.
Now that you have stirred people to learn more, and now that they're learning more, how can people support your work around this issue?
You can support by submitting your comments to the city or signing up to speak at the hearing on June 12th through Vancouver Shape Your City website, or sending a letter to mayor and council, city staff, or other government officials like your local MLA or MP. We've actually got a brief outline of the criteria that the DPP can consider for this application up on our website, which you can use for reference. And you can also pop over to SaveChinatownYVR.org, which also has information and updates. Even if you can't speak on the 12th, I encourage you to show up and support. Some of the seniors were at City Hall for hours on the 29th, and it's always helpful to get support on the ground in whatever ways we can. And of course, if you can share and help raise awareness for this important issue for Chinatown, we would greatly appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for your time today, Russell. And big expression of solidarity to you and everybody involved.
Thanks so much, Leslie. Yeah, we're really appreciative of the solidarity, whether it's from you, as well as, of course, we've received a lot of support and solidarity from other community groups and communities like our Japanese Canadian and Nikkei neighbors, as well as Punjabi Market Collective and others. So, yeah, definitely appreciative of that. Thank you.
Points
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard Hairspin by Devours. My name is Leslie, and I hope you learned a lot from Russell from our conversation just now. I'm very, very grateful for his knowledge and his time and energy for chatting with me. And, you know, the reason why I wanted to invite him onto the program today is because Chinatown means a lot to me. and as it does to many people, I was not raised in Chinatown. I was born in Vancouver, but I was raised in the suburbs. But Chinatown has an important place in my heart. When my family first came to Vancouver, they were escaping a really difficult living situation in a different province, and they were not able to make connections nor to meet community members in that province. When they got to BC, they lived in a Vancouver Chinatown SRO for 3 months that their one connection in Vancouver could set up for them. And obviously, those living situations were not ideal. SROs tend to be very dilapidated and outdated. And if I recall correctly, they didn't even have a window in their SRO, is what my mother had told me. But the one thing that kind of brought them onto their feet to begin their settlement journey here was the fact that they were living in the hub of Chinese culture in Canada, in Vancouver. They could go downstairs and buy groceries from people who spoke their language. They had neighbors who were from neighboring towns and cities. And that's what really helped them get onto their feet for those first few months. Chinatown is still a place that my family visits whenever, you know, throughout my childhood before it got really, really gentrified. You know, we would go down there for traditional medicines. Sometimes we would go grocery shopping there and always would buy our rice from Rice World. I remember when I was really young, when we were still not economically very good. Kent's Kitchen was one of the eateries that that would kind of be considered a treat, because when my parents didn't have the time or energy or desire to eat or make home-cooked food, they would go down to Kent's Kitchen, where they could get a lot of food for not a lot of money to feed our family and to feed us for maybe two or three meals. And now Kent's Kitchen is not in Chinatown anymore. Now a lot of those businesses that we used to go to aren't in Chinatown anymore because of gentrification. And that's not great for us, a family that lives in the suburbs who has at least one immediate family member who can help them navigate through the English-speaking world in Canada. But think about how detrimental that would be for a low-income senior who, let's say, just got her Canadian citizenship, even though she's been in Canada for maybe over 15 years, and she doesn't speak a lot of English. That's really hard. So I really hope that today's conversation with Russell has sparked an interest and mindset in you to show up for the residents of Chinatown, because so many of us Chinese people in Canada, we got our start there. So many people continue to live there. And it serves as an important and special place, not only in our history and culture, but also in Vancouver's history and culture. So please do show up for the residents of Chinatown in the ways that you can. I will share some reading material about this whole thing in the show notes of this episode's archive thing. on cjsf.ca later on this week. That will include an article published in Vancouver Sun talking about urban planner Louisa May Koo's report on culturally appropriate housing. It will also contain other you know, links to Save Chinatown YVR and the work of Chinatown Today. But I wanted to leave the session with a quote that I read in an article from the Taiyi that was published a few days ago. So the article was called Chinatown Seniors Return to City Hall to Protest 105 Kiefer. And this is written by Christopher Chung. He talked to some of the elders who showed up, and this is what Ms. Huo had to say. This really is a dilemma. I see it in two ways. All cities need to grow, so why would you reject more housing? But on the other hand, who's that housing for? If you're a city planner working on a neighborhood like Chinatown, are you really going to invite more rich people to come live here? Are you using that power that you have for the good of the people? When you're making decisions, shouldn't you consider the low-income people first before the people at the top? This isn't about politics. This is about the life of everyday people. That's why I don't think this project is fair. Here is more local talent. Wow, this is Sad China and Holly BB. With Holly BB's remix of Ocean Girl. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. I hope you enjoyed today's program. If you learned anything, if you were engaged, you know, tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends to support the people in Chinatown. That's really the thesis of this episode. And of course, I'm extremely grateful for your ears on today's program. Once again, one more shout out and expression of gratitude to Chinatown Today and to Russell Cheung for his time and energy joining me on the program. Tune into more great CJSF programming. Check out Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon with your host, Charlotte Sister C. Farrell. Charlotte is an artist, a writer herself. She makes a great show highlighting local arts, writing, and poetry by local elders. So check it out. Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon every Friday from 10 to 11. Once again, I'm Leslie. Thanks for tuning into the show today. Little Pimienta. Ein Sof. Infinito. Enjoy. Cuando sueño contigo.